a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The House Committee on Transportation will now come to order, please. Thank you. I'd like to welcome all the visitors in the room and the people listening to us on the Internet. I'm sure there's thousands of them out there just waiting with bated breath to hear this testimony today. Looks like some of you might disagree. I don't know. Just a reminder, make sure you turn off all your cell phones. We're going to be quick to call you on that because we're almost out of jerky down on the floor. And just a reminder that if you your cell phone goes off or your computer, we don't want any strange noises, you do owe us jerky. It's kind of interesting. The speaker yesterday said he got a call from Jack Links and wondered why their sales had surged so much out here in Pierre. So I'm sure he'll get a campaign donation. Okay, I think we're all set, so we'll have the secretary call the roll.
Representatives Feikert.
Here.
Ring.
Here.
Shrimp.
Here.
Russell.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Kaiser.
Here.
Qualm.
Here.
Rasmussen.
Here.
Stalzer.
Here.
Shanefish.
Here.
Duvall.
Here.
Hickey.
Here.
And Verschiel.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you so much. And before we move on to the minutes, let's introduce our two handsome young men in the blue shirts there who are our pages for this meeting. Come on up and introduce yourself and tell us where you go to school and what you plan on doing for future education, if you would.
Hi, my name is Tommy Nealon. I'm from Watertown, and after high school, I plan on going to Bradley University to study history.
Hi, my name is Scott Ma. I go to Sioux Falls Christian High School. After school, I'm going to go to Northwestern University to study economics.
Economics. Yeah, then you're going to be a politician, I bet, right?
Economist.
An economist. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. You only become a politician after you teach economics for 33 years.
Is it true that the only difference between an economist and a CPA is that most people like CPAs?
No comment.
No comment, Mr. Chairman. Unless I think of something clever later.
Thank you, Representative Ring. As you can tell, we keep it kind of lighthearted here. We do get along fine. I would entertain a motion for approval of the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay, thank you very much. Remind everyone who is planning on testifying this morning to please sign in back at the podium as you come in the door there and put the bill number and whether you're going to be pro or con on the bill. That helps us out as far as managing our time, and we would appreciate that. If you have any handouts, the pages, the two young men that just introduced themselves, will pass those out to the committee. And if you want to distribute to the floor, they'll do the same thing. Also a reminder to keep it civil. All questions will be directed through, once we're through the comedy openings here, we'll keep it civil, directed through the chair, and I certainly would appreciate that. And with that, we have three bills we're going to work on today, and we'll proceed to consideration of bills. And the first bill is Senate Bill 53, which is a bill to expand the application of the farm decal system. Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 53? Good morning, Ms. Helmer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's been a while since I've been in here. I've kind of missed all of you. I didn't lobby you hard on these particular two bills that I'll be dealing with this morning. They're really relatively simple. I do want to talk about the act to expand the farm decal system. Currently today, we do have a farm decal that is provided to straight trucks with two or three axles or truck tractors. This allows those designated vehicles to travel within the free zones of surrounding states. We have free zones with the state of Nebraska, and that's where most of them are being used, is in the Nebraska area. This legislation merely expands the vehicle type to any vehicle designated as a farm vehicle by the farmer. And the reason that we're doing that is with the passage of federal legislation referred to as moving ahead for progress in the 21st century, or MAP 21, there were provisions that exempted certain licensees from federal requirements, such as the CDL, medical card, hours of service, and inspections for repair and maintenance. However, in order to be exempt, the federal government requires that the vehicle must be equipped with either a special license plate or other designation by the state in which the vehicle is registered to allow for identification. So that's why we asked to expand that farm decal to any vehicle that the farmer designates that meets the qualifications. And we're kind of tag-teaming this today, myself and Captain Brewers, because he deals with the enforcement side of this and has much more knowledge on those federal requirements than I do. I do the administrative side of it. So at this point, I will turn it over to Captain Brewers to explain the rest of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further proponents? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and the members of the committee. My name is John Brewers. I'm the captain of the Highway Patrol's Motor Carrier Division. I'm speaking to you on Senate Bill 53. I believe the page is handed out a handout, and I want to direct your attention to the bottom portion of that. MAP 21 was, of course, the transportation package from the federal government that exempted qualified farm vehicles from a lot of the normal Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration regulations. The big ones that they're exempted from is CDLs, drug and alcohol testing programs. They still can't drive with drugs and alcohol. They just don't have a program to test their drivers randomly. They don't have to have a medical card. The hours of service rules do not apply, or the inspection, repair, and maintenance. And I would point out that that's more of the proof of that they've checked those. That's the largest part of Part 396. And the important one for the citizens of South Dakota to have this farm bill is it's not widely used now. It's just to get that exemption in Nebraska for the CDLs. Well, in South Dakota, we don't have to do a whole lot for us because our guys know who a South Dakota farmer is, whether it's the seed corn hat or the cargo or what have you. We feel pretty confident we can tell who a farmer is. And I jest, but if you say you're hauling your own product and you're registered as such, and we can show that that's what you're doing, we don't need something to tell us you're a South Dakota farmer. The primary one on this one is that it's the farmers, when they travel out of state, are going to need this sticker. Apparently Nebraska and Iowa need to know who a South Dakota farmer is. The important piece of the federal legislation is that the states gets to choose how they designate a farm vehicle, and that can be a sticker, a whole separate license plate, can be a notation on the registration. South Dakota already has the farm sticker in place. It's free of charge. We just need to expand what vehicles are eligible for that farm sticker, and here's why. The way the MAP 21 legislation works to exempt the farmers is if they would be exempt from those regulations I stated within the entire state of South Dakota, the state that the vehicle's registered in. They're also, if they're under 26,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating, they're exempt nationwide. So if I have a fancy cutting horse that I want to take to a show in Fort Worth, Texas, I can use my pickup or my Suburban in that single horse trailer and take them all the way down there and not have to comply with those federal exemptions. Once you move to the bigger trucks, the over 26,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating, then it's within 150 miles of the farm, regardless of state lines. Now, currently we have reciprocity agreements with some of the states for 150-mile radius for CDLs. There's some exemptions for logbooks within 150 miles. But this throws the smaller vehicles into it nationwide, and it goes, we don't have to have those reciprocity agreements anymore. The only ones we had were for the CDLs. Now this extends that reciprocity to all those federal regulations. And that's the crux of this, and I'd be happy to stand by for any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any other proponents? One last time for proponents for Senate Bill 53. Are there any opponents to Senate Bill 53? Any opponents? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on to the committee question portion. Does anyone on the committee have a question of either one of the proponents? Seeing none, we'll move on to discussion and or action. Representative Hickey moves to pass, seconded by Representative Duvall. I hear the female voice, and I can't quite tell which one it is over there, unless I'm looking right at him. There you go. I should split you up. Okay. SB 53 has been moved and seconded to do pass. Any comments?
Yes.
Representative Shrimp, go ahead.
I guess I should have called a little bit sooner, but what does this special license cost?
Nothing.
No cost to it?
No. Okay. That's pretty good. You thought there was no free lunch. You found one, huh? Any other comments on the motion? If not, we'll have the secretary call the roll. Those in favor will vote aye, and those opposed, the same.
Representatives Feikert?
Aye.
Ring?
Aye.
Shrimp?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Kaiser?
Aye.
Qualm?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Shanefish?
Aye.
Duvall?
Aye.
Hickey?
Aye.
And Vercio?
Aye.
13 yeas.
Thank you, Representative Qualm. I move consent. Is there a second? Any objection? Okay, SB 53 will be placed on the consent calendar. Go to the House floor. Who did second that one? Representative Stalzer. Okay. And now we'll move on to Senate Bill 57, which defines a biodiesel producer and bulk plant operator and revise certain statutory references and to make certain form and style changes regarding motor fuel taxation. Are there any proponents for Senate Bill 57?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Deborah Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. The department, as you know, or the governor asked the departments to do a red tape for review, and what you will see before you is basically a review of our motor fuel tax laws. These laws have been in place since 1996, and we felt it was time to go back and take a look at them, and we were amazed at some of the things that we found that had been there since 1996, quite honestly. But during our review, we discovered missing definitions, incorrect citations and cross-references, the use of incorrect words in some places, and missing words in others. The bill defines biodiesel producer and bulk plant operators in sections 1 and 2. These definitions are needed, but were missing in the current law. Referred to them in the current law, but we didn't define them. So what we've done in this bill is actually define those. We had incorrect citations were located and corrected in sections 3, 13, 14, of the bill. For example, in section 13, the correct references was section 91, not 96. The use of incorrect words were corrected in sections 5, 6, 11, 13, and 15. For example, in section 11, a bulk plant operator needed a license for a bulk plant, not for a terminal site, as stated in the current law. and the correct word is bill of lading with no hyphens, and thus you will see the changes in various sections. When you look at it, you can't really tell because it looks like it's underlined or that it's not there, so it looks like there was no changes, but we're making the word consistent so that there's no hyphens. Missing words are added in sections 7, 9, 12, 18, and 19. For example, in section 7, the words operated within the state were added to clarify exactly what terminal operator is to be licensed. We clarified language was added in sections 5, 6, 8, and 10. For example, the language engaged in the production of ethanol, biodiesel, and methanol was added to make the uniform definitions. Finally, unneeded or outdated language was deleted in sections 4, 5, 6, 16, 17, and 19. For example, notice by telegram was removed in section 16. I'm not sure anybody uses telegram anymore. I did provide you with a section by section just so that you would have some paper perhaps to throw away or recycle down the road in case you had any questions. But we do ask that you do support Senate Bill 57 as it is a cleanup of some of our language and our motor fuel laws. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Helmer. Are there any further proponents to Senate Bill 57? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Donna Lightsky. I'm with the South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association. And about 3 weeks ago, I think we had a luncheon at our Highway Users Conference, and at that time, I did express to you that we do work closely with the Department of Revenue, and I actually think that I specifically mentioned Ms. Helmer, and today is evidence that we do work closely together on all kinds of things. I do ask your support for this. I personally do look at the fuel tax manual. Probably nobody else in the state does, but for those reasons, it is important that we have everything consistent and concise and in one section of the law. Again, we do work closely with the Department of Revenue. Ms. Helmer and I did sit down and go through this section by section. I think all the changes are appropriate, and we would ask your favorable approval on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there any further proponents? Okay, seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 57? It's all one big hug fest today, isn't it? Seeing none, we'll move on to committee questions. Are there any questions from any committee members? Representative Kaiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for Ms. Deborah Helmer. A lot of this whole section has to deal with tax and stuff, and I know you brought up that word. Is there anything in here that changes anything with the actual taxes on this on these products?
Mr. Chairman, no, absolutely not. There's no tax change in this whatsoever. Everything that we have today is taxed at the way that it is under, I think, 1047B4 has the tax rates in it, and nothing in here affects tax rates or how we tax or handle anything. It's merely, truly just a cleanup of language. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Okay, let's move on then to committee discussion and or action. Representative Rasmussen.
I ask that we do pass.
Second.
Representative Rasmussen moves do pass, seconded by Representative Hickey for Senate Bill 57. Any comment? Representative Rasmussen. Yeah. Representative Hickey?
Nope.
Anyone else? Very good, then. We will have the Secretary call the roll. Those in favor will say aye, and those opposed, same sign.
Representatives Feigert?
Aye.
Ring?
Aye.
Shrimp?
Aye.
Russell?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Kaiser?
Aye.
Qualm?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Shane Fish?
Aye.
Duval?
Aye.
Hickey?
Aye.
And Hershiel?
Aye.
We have 13 yeas.
Representative Duval moves to the consent calendar, seconded by Steele. Any comment? All those in favor will say aye. All those opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Opposed? SB 57 will also go on the consent calendar. We're going to make the Speaker of the House very happy here today. We right now then are going to wait a bit for the next sponsor to come in. And while we're doing that, I'm going to turn this bill over to Representative Hickey because I am the prime sponsor in the House on this, and I don't want to exert any undue influence on anyone on this bill, so I'm going to turn the gavel over to Representative Hickey.
Senate Bill 78 revised certain provisions relating to medical requirements for intrastate drivers transporting passengers and updates certain references to federal statutes. We'll take proponent testimony. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to this wonderful side of the Capitol building. You may proceed. Introduce yourself.
Good morning. My name is Mike Valley. I'm Senator from District 20, which is Aurora, Girald, and Davison counties, and I live in Mitchell. It's good to be back to the Senate, or through the, House Transportation Committee. This was the first committee that I was on, and it was actually the first committee that I went to when I came here. And we were in a different room, obviously, at that time. We've been remodeled, but the Steve Street and I had gotten to know each other. He's a Democrat from up in the northeast part of the state, and we came in and sat down, and we started talking to each other. And I says, well, which side are we supposed to sit on here? Do we divide this up? And he says, I don't know. I says, well, I don't either. I says, I'm just going to sit here. He says, so will I. So we did that, and then other people came in, and well, they didn't know which side to sit on because we'd kind of screwed up the works right off the bat. So it ended up, I think for that whole session, I sat on the wrong side of the table according to what the rules were or whatever, what people understood to be the rules. So I thought that transportation was a nonpartisan committee. And so Steve and I felt the same way, and that's how it ended up. So it's good to be back here. Today I'm bringing to you a bill called Senate Bill 78. It has two parts to it. I'm not going to speak a whole lot to the first part of it. I'm going to let the Department of Public Service talk to that part, and that's the part where we're going from 2012 Federal Highway Administration rules to the rules promulgated in 2013. And I can go over them if you need be, but he can do a much a better job than I am. When this bill was drafted, it took in that part of the bill, and so they just thought it was best to change it from 2012 to 2013. And the thing that I need to remind you, and none of us like, is that if we don't approve those, it's the hammer from the feds that take 5% the first year and 10% every year thereafter of our federal highway funds. So I don't like that, but that's what it is. The second part is a part that deals with a DOT physical. And Mitchell, I think it was in about 2009, decided they wanted to make sure their bus drivers on their transit system were in good physical shape. So they thought the best thing to do was to make them take the DOT physical. And that was all well and good until they got sued because we have an exemption for that in state law that says you do not, you can't require someone to take the DOT physical. We opted out of that. That suit now is settled. It's done. We're all done, so we aren't going to affect anything. That's water under the bridge and over the dam or whatever. So what we're saying is, let the communities decide on their own if they want to have a DOT physical. And I'll take Mitchell, I'll take my district for example, and you know, I can't remember right now if Plankinton has a transit bus. But let's say Plankinton does have one, and Mitchell decides that they want to have this DOT physical, be part of their job qualification. But Plankinton on the other side says, you know, guy driving our bus and what we have here in Plankinton or maybe White Lake, we don't need that here. We don't get out on the interstate. We don't go anywhere. We're just around town here. So we really don't need to worry about that. Fine. Let the local community make that decision. And that's all this bill does. It just gives to the local communities that option to be able to require a DOT physical. And the ironic part of this is you might send your child to school in the morning, and the bus driver on that bus has to have a DOT physical. We've got that written into law. You know, we want to make sure our children are safe when they get on that bus, so the bus driver is going to have a DOT physical. You're working, and so is your spouse, so you have someone pick up your child from the transit service, picks them up at the YM at the school, and takes them to the Y along with a bunch of other kids. That one does not have a DOT physical. You can't require that they have a DOT physical. Same kids, going the same, driving down the same route, may even be the same bus, but the driver on this one doesn't have to have a DOT physical. Let the community make that decision. I think that's about all that I want to say. I know the Municipal League will give a little bit better explanation or a further explanation of it. And I know the Trucking Association, I don't know if Myron is here or not, and he had his intern with him. I don't know if he's not here today. I said that in jest because it was another lobbyist. He joked and said he introduced himself as an intern for Myron. But he's not here today. But if you have any questions, be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 78. Please come forward. Introduce yourself and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Brewers. I'm the commander for the Motor Carrier Division of the South Dakota Highway Patrol. The material that's being passed out this morning, you'll notice, has Senate Bill 42 on the top. I went green and decided not to reprint it with the change to changing it to Senate Bill 78. As Senator Valley said, this does what we need it to do. And the part that's in his side of the bill, I'll say, we agree with as well. We support that. Anytime we can have a more qualified driver on the road, we have a safer operator, which means safer roads for everybody. Every year we adopt the new changes to the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration rules that govern highway safety as well as the transportation of hazardous materials. Adopting this bill helps ensure that there's not a checkerboard across the nation and we have consistent rules for the transportation industry as they travel across America. Every year we average about 28,000 vehicle inspections that the Motor Carrier Services and the Highway Patrol does every year. It's important that these regulations stay the same for everybody. And I'll point out a few things as we go through on where it's important we are the same as our neighboring states. There's three main things that have changed since we last adopted these Federal Motor Carrier rules since last year. The first one would be the National Registry of Certified Medical Examiners. What this change does is drivers that are involved in interstate commerce have to have a medical card. There's standards that are set by the Department of Transportation that says if you meet any of these, you'll be fine. You can safely operate a commercial motor vehicle at 80,000 pounds. If you have these certain medical conditions, you're probably not safe to do that. What they did is they created this registry of medical examiners. They wanted the doctors to be trained. The qualifications are to be a commercial motor vehicle driver. They're not going to go back and train doctors how to take blood pressure and do an eye exam and things like that. This is to teach them the standards of the DOT physicals. Now, this law went into effect this past year, but it doesn't go into practice until May 21st of 2014. The rule established the medical registry and the requirements for that. So, in the meantime, our doctors, physicians assistants, nurse practitioners, and chiropractors can take this training, and then they'll be able to offer the service to commercial motor vehicle drivers. you can go get a medical card right up until that date from any family practice doctor or any qualified person right up until that date. But once that date happens, you have to go to someone that is on the list. Now, when this first came out, I was rather worried. Being South Dakota's a rural state, a lot of small towns, I was worried we were going to have three people doing physical examinations across the state. We'd have one at Occupational Health in Sioux Falls, one in Rapid, and hopefully one in Aberdeen. But I did some research with industry and some of our partners. I spoke to a physician at the Sanford, that's in the Sanford system. He said, oh, yeah, they've been pushing this education. They're going to have it at this conference and that conference, and the administration's been getting us to take that training so we can still offer those services. So that made me feel much better about the availability of the physical examinations. I've talked to several other folks, some chiropractors. They all plan on taking this training and passing that test so they can offer that service as part of their business. The next piece of rulemaking that's changed since last year is distracted driving has been added to the Federal Motor Carrier Rules. What this does is it requires a one-touch call and answer from people that are driving commercial motor vehicles. If you're driving 80,000-pound, 100,000-pound tractor trailer with double trailers, we feel your mind is best on the road and both hands on the wheel. This does not disallow cell phone usage. It just says you have to have a hands-free device, such as a Bluetooth earpiece or a headset. It can have a cord. It can be wireless, but you need to answer and dial the phone with just one touch. It doesn't outlaw two-way radios. There's exemptions in there for emergency calls, things like that, but we want those hands on the wheel is the theory there, as well as we don't want you distracted. The last major change to the federal rules are the hours of service, the logbooks. Now, some of those went into effect in February of 2012. We've been able to allow drivers to take advantage of those because it was advantageous to the drivers in this two-phase, in the first phase of two phases of the new rules. The first part of the first phase is they allow 2 hours in the seat of a parked commercial motor vehicle, or if you're driving with two people, a co-driver team driver setup, you can have 2 hours in the passenger seat in a moving vehicle. Previously, you had to have 10 hours of rest between your full day of driving. You can drive for 11 hours, and then the rules say you have to have at least 10 hours off. Well, before you had to have 10 hours completely off duty, meaning sleeping in a bed in a motel or in your home, or 10 hours in the sleeper berth. What this does is it just changes. You don't have to stare at the ceiling in your tractor trailer anymore for that extra 2 hours if you can't sleep for 10. You can sit in the seat. You can do your email. You can check in with the company. You know, whatever you want to do for those 2 hours as long as you're not driving, so you still get that full 10 hours of rest. You can take those 2 hours at the beginning of your shift or the end of your shift. And by shift, I mean the rest period. A couple small changes that don't really affect too much of the rules for South Dakota. They made a change to define egregious violations of the hours of service rules, and they say that's 3 or more hours beyond your driving time limit. So you can drive for 11 hours right now. If you extend that by 3 hours on a consistent basis, when the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration does what's called a safety audit or a compliance review, when they've identified your company as operating unsafely, they might come in and look at your hours of service rules and, your hours of service records. And if they find a consistent pattern there, they can enhance those penalties. But South Dakota Highway Patrol does not do those audits or compliance reviews. It made a real quick change on how the driver logs waiting time for certain oil field work. It just literally, instead of writing it here, you write it here, and this is how you notate it in the book. So no real effect on us. The second phase goes into effect on July 1st of 2013. What that does is within your first 8 hours of driving, you have to take a half-hour rest break. Most of us are going to be doing that anyway. We need to get something to eat. We need to use the restroom. We need to check our truck, make a phone call, things like that. So I don't feel that's going to be real burdensome or fought hard within the industry, but it's a quick 30-minute break sometime within that first 8 hours of driving out of your 11 hours of driving for the day. The other change is a change to a 34-hour restart. Right now you get to drive for 70 hours in a week. After that, you need 34 hours of time off where you're not driving that truck down the road. Now, right now, you can take any 34 consecutive hours, and that counts as your restart. Then that resets that 70-hour clock back down to zero. Those are everybody's days off. What this does, this change does, is it says within that 34 hours that you're taking off to reset that clock, you have to have two periods between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. The theory there is 99.9% of America is awake during the day and they sleep at night. That's what your body clock tells your body, that you need to be sleeping right now. So the research shows that you need those nighttime hours of sleep in order to get full and adequate rest. So now that's why they're requiring the two periods between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. So you could drive all night right now. You could get off at 8 in the morning, take 34 consecutive hours off. You're really only getting one night's sleep. You just go back to work the next afternoon. With this change, it requires basically two nights of sleep in order to get that good restorative sleep to get you going back on the road for another 70 hours in the next week. Those are the changes to the that have happened. There's a couple other minor changes that have occurred, but they're frankly they don't affect South Dakota. Some border agreements between other states, some things on the Canadian or Mexican border, but they really have no effect on us. So I haven't detailed those out on there because it's nothing that we'll ever enforce or have to deal with in South Dakota. I'll be happy to stand by for any questions that you may have after everybody else speaks. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take additional proponent testimony, Senate Bill 78. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Bob Miller, and I'm the registered lobbyist for the Dakota Mass Transit Association. We're the folks that drive the little white buses and haul the senior citizens and the kids around the state. And in fact, we drive 7 million miles on South Dakota streets and roads every year. So we've seen it all. Mr. Chairman, the bill came from both the Municipal League and the Mass Transit Association to solve a problem we had on physicals. It is a permissive piece of legislation. It doesn't require anybody to do anything in terms of the physical. It's strictly permissive by company, by city, by county, whoever happens to operate the transit system. I have the actual medical form with me. It's three pages, and one of which is filled out by the applicant. And, you know, then there's about 7 pages of instructions and disclaimers and so on, all the legal stuff. But that's all it is. It's not something you have to go to Rochester to get a physical. It's very simple. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll tell you, it is just simply, it's about safety of our kids. And if our companies want to require a physical of our drivers, we ought to be able to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony, Senate Bill 78. Welcome.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Donna Lightsky with the South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association. And usually I say that's a gas station guys, but in this case I'm the transport and bulk truck guys, and I haul both petroleum and propane, which are both hazardous materials. I'm going to specifically talk about the federal adoption of the motor carrier rules. And I just want to reiterate what the captain said. It's really important that we stay consistent and we don't have checkerboarding as we go from state to state. And you might be thinking, okay, we have 8 terminal pipelines in the state of South Dakota. When do you cross into other states? But many times, I'd probably say 50% of the times, when we're trying to load petroleum or propane and there's outages at the pipelines, we do travel as far as Oklahoma, Kansas, Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota. So we cross those state lines a lot. And it's important that if I'm loading over in Minnesota, when I cross back into South Dakota, the same rules apply to me. Because I might load legal there, come across here, and now I'm in violation and I get picked up by a motor carrier and I get a violation. So that is very critical for us. So I urge you to pass this bill, and if you have any questions, I will stand by. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional proponent testimony, Senate Bill 78. One more time, proponent testimony. Let's move to opponent testimony. Anybody here to oppose Senate Bill 78? I'm not seeing anyone. Anybody? Yes, here we go. Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Mike Boyle, and just a citizen. And I have various different knowledge of different truckers and so forth and farmers and all those kind of things. And I guess it just seems like, and I was a bus driver for 10 years, and my thought was is that then I had to jump through a lot of hoops, and not that I couldn't do it, but the reality is that it seems like our nation is becoming more and more and more controlled of everything we possibly do. And I don't know, I'm just not really crazy about all the other stuff. I just think that we as individuals should be a little more responsible and try to take care of ourselves. And you know, if my neighbor is having a hard time, you know, I should be recommending them that not being in the driving situation or et cetera. I just feel like we're just bombarding more laws, more rules, and so forth. And I just reject it personally. And the health and so forth, we already got stuff, I think, probably adequate to deal with that. Probably all the other things, too. And, you know, crossing from one state to another, if we're lesser, the laws are less, then they won't have their problems. And if everybody, you know, I don't see the wrong with checkerboarding. And that kind of concept, in my opinion, if you have that, then everybody has to be the same. And I'm not so sure if that's the right thing to do either, just to join hands because everybody else is doing it. And so I just don't think it's the wisest way to go. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. Broyle. Apologize if I said your name wrong. I would ask you to sign in here, sir, if you could. We didn't get you registered as a testifier today. We'd like to get your name exact. Ask for additional opponent testimony on Senate Bill 78. Anybody else? Opponent testimony? Okay, well, we'll close the testimony time and move to committee. Oh, rebuttal, please. Yes, I forgot that.
Thank you, members of the committee. My rebuttal is just going to talk about the aspect of the bus service. Right now, in interstate commerce, you as a truck driver have to have a medical. It's only in intrastate commerce that this rule came up with the buses. So that's when we made the exemption way back then, that if you are in intrastate commerce, and it was dealing with trucks at that time, and I wish Myron Rao would have been here because he could tell you the story when it started out back in 1995 much more eloquently than I can. And that exemption was put in for intrastate commerce, and it also covered the buses at that time. So that's why that was put in. And now when we are having these transit buses that, like Mitchell has, they just want to make sure that they're covering themselves liability-wise for having make sure that we have a driver that's safe to be behind the wheel carrying our kids. And so that's why we decided that let's use what's being used in interstate commerce. That's kind of the gold standard, is a DOT physical. That's probably the easiest one to do, and everyone knows what's in it. And that's why we chose to go that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Okay, with that, we will close testimony on Senate Bill 78, move to committee questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Representative Ring.
For Senator Valley, and you referred to Myron, and I'm forgetting his last name, who probably should be the person that maybe should be the person to answer this. Why this prohibition in the first place that we're removing now? What was the rationale for saying drivers shouldn't have to take this test?
Well, like I said, the Truckers Association would probably be the best one to answer that question, but I think what they were looking at back then was in 95, and maybe Representative Fikert could answer it even better also, is that it was required that they all had to take the physical at that time. And there were local trucks that were just driving from the farm. Let's say a guy had a business and he was just trucking the grain from the farm into the elevator, and they didn't feel that he needed to have a DOT physical. And so that's how that thought process started, was we had people that were in intrastate commerce, just within the state, that they thought, you know, and sometimes they were just part-time people, just during harvest or whatever. And so they thought, you know, let's just exempt out of this. We aren't going to have that in South Dakota. The problem is it was not optional. It was said that we opted out of that law. And so when the community of Mitchell decided, not knowing that part of the law, just decided, you know, we think we want to have a physical, make sure our bus drivers are in tip-top shape, and let's just use the DOT physical because everybody knows what that's at, and they got sued. So that was the reason, was the local truckers at that time, they came in and lobbied and says, gee, we don't need to have this DOT physical for the guy who just comes in from the, you know, the part-time haulers and things like that. So that's the best I can remember, Representative.
Please.
So we went from requiring everybody to not allowing anybody to be required. Is that?
Yes. That would be, what it did was say we weren't going to conform with that part, and we were not going to make that in intrastate commerce. You did right. not. If you would have gone across the border, you'd have been in trouble if you didn't have the DOT physical. So
right.
if you took that truck and you drove across to Minnesota or delivered your soybeans down to Sioux City to the plant there, you cross the border, you're in trouble. You had to have a DOT physical. But if you were just intrastate commerce, just hauling from the local elevator or maybe from one elevator to another to get it to a train handling facility, that was a thought process then. We aren't going to make those people have a DOT physical.
Follow up?
I guess the point I'm trying to get at is it seems to me it was an overreaction. I mean, it wasn't just saying we're not going to require this. It was saying we're not going to allow employers to require it. Is that right? And so now we're going back to the middle ground.
I would say that this is a middle ground.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there additional questions from our committee? I'm not seeing any. Discussion? Committee discussion? Representative Shrimp?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I felt like the last gentleman that talked. We're shoving more rules, more regulations, and everything, and I'm not going to support this bill just on account of that. I just feel like we've put enough regulations on everything, and it's about time we stop doing that. So with that, I'm going to not support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional, Representative Kaiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo somewhat Representative Shrimp had to say, and I wanted to thank Mr. Mike Boyle for coming out and talking a little bit. I find a lot of this stuff just unreal, and on one hand you can tell me I live in a free country, and then on the other regulate my sleep habits, demand certain medical examinations, and the feds are going to cram it down our throat by a strong-arm blackmail deal where they say either do it or you don't get our money. And one of the constant themes here was this checkered board across the nation. We're supposed to be a checkered board across the nation. It's the states that made the federal government, not the other way around. And this argument to get on one table with the federal government is ideology, a bigger argument to just get rid of the states and get rid of the individual houses in each state who are supposed to make the laws that affect the citizens. I would encourage you to vote no on this. Regulation is just creeping in every single time we turn around, and the people in D.C. don't understand, if not just don't even care about how we run our state and how we operate. I'd encourage you to vote no.
Thank you. Additional committee discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Feikert.
You know, and I can understand the feelings of the two previous speakers, but, you know, unfortunately here in South Dakota with a smaller population and probably a whole lot different dynamics on our highways. This really comes down to a matter of safety is really what it comes down to. And I think we deal here in South Dakota with a lot of regulations that come out of the federal government that are probably a result of what happens in some of the much, much heavier populated states and the much heavier traffic loads. This is a tough one. I mean, like a lot of them here in the legislature are. But I think that with the permissive, it's permissive. There's nothing forcing the employers to do this. And I think with that in mind, the state does have control of this. So I think we need to try to keep our highways safe and try to work with the federal government as well. We take things here in South Dakota pretty seriously about our private rights and so of that.
Additional committee discussion. Representative Steele.
I guess I have to ask that question from just the committee. As I understand it, this has no repercussions from the federal government if we do not pass this. Is that correct? Because this is intra, so it shouldn't matter.
Anybody want to answer that? I did not hear that. I don't think that's correct. Representative Russell.
Representative and Mr. Chairman, I do believe that the testimony was that we would lose highway funding if this did not pass. Because there's two portions to the bill. One has to do with what we're doing intrastate, and then the other portion has to do with simply swallowing hard on all the new federal regulations that were put into the federal register and promulgated as rules. So that's the piece that is mandatory from the part of the federal government that they're forcing down our throats.
Okay, to follow up question, Representative Steele.
If that's the case, then should have we had two bills here to technically? It's past that point now, but unless we want to tear it all apart, which I don't think we want to do. But I have a hard time having us cram that down our throat again like the federal government seems to have a habit of doing. And I guess that what really sticks in my craw is it's going to have to... We get a little sick and tired of the federal government telling us, we're going to take 5%, we're going to take 10%, if you don't jump through our hoop. It appears we have to jump through their hoop one more time, and I guess I'll vote for it, but I'm doing it under protest.
Additional committee discussion. Representative Qualm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have to agree with everything that's been said. It just gets very upsetting, everything the federal government tries to do to us, but unfortunately they give us these mandates and we have no choice. But on the other hand, the other part of it where we're talking about the physical, we're actually giving people the option to do it. So there's actually a sense of giving people the freedom to, they can or they can't. It's up to the employer, and I think that's probably a good place to have that.
Okay. All right, I will move to committee discussion and or action. We have any action? Don't jump all in at once, please. It will be hard for me
Chairman,
to figure out. Representative Schoenfisch.
I would move to pass.
Second.
Okay. We have Representative Schoenfisch, do pass motion. Representative Feikert, second. Any discussion on that?
Well, even with the concerns, I think considering the ramifications of not doing this, we need to move it to the floor.
Okay. Representative Feikert.
I made my comments.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Russell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to echo what the good representative from Aberdeen said about the citizen who came here today. And I'm sorry that I cannot recall what your name was, but I want to thank you for coming forward because it takes a lot of chutzpah, you might say, to do so. And I think that it's a more profound issue than any of us want to even
acknowledge. And from that standpoint, you know, you essentially have the gun to your head. We're talking about modifying state law by adopting these rules that were promulgated by a federal agency. And so, you know, I've had real difficulty with these changes in the past, because there was one case where I had a gentleman who, you know, business owners, he had been arrested on a driving under the influence charge, the only one he had ever had. He had a CDL, and he had a really low blood alcohol level. I mean, it was a .08 something. I mean, just barely over the limit. And I always had a policy where if you were within a certain range, that I would always plead those down to a reckless driving charge. And I offered the reckless driving to the defendant, and I was wondering why they were fighting it so bad. And then I realized, in speaking with the defense attorney, that there had been a change in the Code of Federal Regulations, which were adopted by the state, that required that the judge had no ability to do anything but take your license for an entire year, even on a reckless driving conviction. And it was so onerous and so ridiculous that I eventually, I think, pled that case down to a careless in order to avoid that. But all I want to say is that I really do appreciate the testimony from a citizen that has the courage to come in here and take on an issue that we all want to ignore. Because, frankly, some of this business is hurtful and harms our citizens. And so for that, I want to thank you. And I really do appreciate the fact that the committee took the time to listen to him in a respectful manner. Thank you.
Very good. Any additional discussion? If not, we have a do pass motion on Senate Bill 78. The secretary will call the roll.
Representative Bikert?
Aye.
Ring?
Aye.
Shrimp?
No.
Russell?
No.
Steele?
Reluctant aye.
Kaiser?
No.
Qualm?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Also reluctantly aye.
Shanefish?
Aye.
Duval?
Aye.
Hickey?
Aye.
And Vershiel.
Aye.
We had 10 yeas, 3 nays.
Okay, 10 yeas and 3 nays received sufficient votes to pass to the floor. Senate Bill 78 passes. Thank you. All right, with that, we have, I believe, ended our calendar for this day. And I will turn the gavel back over to Representative Vershiel. He is going to make us work.
Yes, I am. I would like to have Representative Qualm carry 53 in caucus and explain that in caucus, if you would, since it's on the consent. And Representative Duvall, 57. And since I'm the lead co-sponsor, the prime co-sponsor, I will do 78. So I'll have the minutes reflect that so that the speaker and everybody knows what's going on. Okay. Anything else before we adjourn for the morning? All right, so I would entertain that motion.
Hello.
Second. Moved by Fikert, seconded by Hickey. Got it? All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.